The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Another Friday, another raucous, chaotic, wild week. Donald Trump today, as president, got out among the people again, doing what he does best, communicating and explaining and interacting and showing his real personality to people, not behind a brick wall sealed away by the establishment that has virtually complete control of him. I don't know how else to look at it. We'll see over time. But we're going to get away from all of that tonight and do something fascinating for the first 2 hours and talk to a man who has had a very, very rare opportunity in life. His name is Ralph Ring. He is one of the surviving members of a team of technicians and really gifted scientists who worked for legendary inventor Otis T. Carr. And C-A-R-R, Otis T. Carr. Ralph has made himself available for interviews and appearances to discuss his own experience working on Carr's team. Otis Carr, with his team, developed an anti-gravitic spacecraft based upon direct tutoring he received from Nikola Tesla. How's that? Otis T. Carr learned many secrets from Tesla, and much has been lost to time, but there are those here now through this website, which you can connect to by clicking on Ralph's name, who are rediscovering the secrets from Carr's own mysterious writings and his patented drawings. Otis Carr was ultimately shut down by the U.S. government in a very familiar refrain, who asserted that Carr was attempting to overthrow the monetary system. Quote, cease and desist your operations. We're terminating your project due to the threats it poses to the international monetary system, end quote. Asinine, absurd, ridiculous. Do a little bit of research. Look at the pictures we have for you tonight. Go to Ralph Ring's website, and I think you're going to be quite surprised. BlueStarEnterprise.com. Ralph, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine, Jeff. Thank you.
Am I remembering right, Ralph? Were you on this program maybe 20 years ago?
Probably. That's all I can say. I've been in and out and on and off for years.
Yeah.
That's a good possibility.
I do remember the name Ralph Ring and talking about some very eclectic things way, way back. I've interviewed over 20,000 people in 24 years, but I'd bet that you've been on before a long time ago, and you're still here, and it's great to have you back on, if it is back. But in any case, welcome.
Well, thanks very much. And I'd like to mention my wife, Marcia, is here with me. We're actually a team. When I forget to punch the dot or
connect the dot or punch, yeah, sure.
Okay. So anyway, I'm doing fine. Marcia's here. Marcia, would
hi, Marcia.
Hello, Jeff.
Hi. I'm glad you're there, and I'm glad you're there with Ralph. And, you know, it's a shame that more women don't understand the concept of working as a team. They just don't. In this day and age, it's just virtually impossible to find a happy couple. And I think it's only going to become worse. So congratulations to both of you.
Hoping just the opposite. We're hoping that more people will come together and be in the balance of the male and female instead of just going in the masculine and feminine separately. So
right.
Thank you for having it.
Sure, indeed.
Yeah, we've been a great team now for over 35 years. She's been on and off. She's gotten married, I got married, and she's traveled with us actually around the world at different places and different places in the United States. But we've been, she was my best friend, and when I got married, in fact, well, that's another story, but she married my first wife and I, so, and then my wife passed away, and, and Marcia and I became very, very close. And we share peace together.
Well, a great relationship transcends all the garbage and all the harassment that we all go through living in this world. And I'm sure you just said the key word. It's a place to go that you both can share, and it's peace. That's wonderful. Doesn't happen very often.
Thank you.
Now, you're welcome. Otis T. Carr. When did you meet him, Ralph? When was your first encounter? Do you remember?
Well, it was in the late 50s, I believe 59, 1959.
That was quite a year. That was the year that Errol Flynn and Mario Lanza died within 1 week of each other.
Oh, my gosh.
In case you had forgotten.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
How could I forget Robin Hood? My gosh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Well,
anyway, whatever. It's time. And 1959 was kind of a pivotal year in many respects. And when we rolled over into the 60s, things changed. Now,
we were right on the cusp because when we really got heavily involved was in the, you know, November, December, and then into January, you know, into the 60s with our projects. So
now
it's a magical time for us.
Sure it is. Some people say the best years of this country were 1950 to November 1963. And I would go along with that.
Hooray. You're on our team. We feel the same way.
Yeah.
50s and 60s and rock and roll.
Love it. For sure. Otis T. Carr. When you met him, what was he working on? And what brought you into his inner circle? What was it?
Well, let me give you a little background on who and what I am and what I've done that got me involved with Carr. aside from the earlier things that I've been doing, I went into the service and got out and went into diving and started a diving business and worked for U.S. Divers for a while. Was married at the time and was raising some children. And when I was working for U.S. Divers, there were some diving off the coast. This is in Southern California, off of Newport Beach and Balboa area.
Where I grew up.
Really?
Easter Week in Balboa. And you remember where the Balboa Bay Club was? That huge private
club? You're not going to believe this, but my uncle used to own that.
Murchison
Coast Country Club. He's 51% sole owner of the Irvine Coast Country Club.
Well, the Murchisons owned it at one point.
Well, I don't know where, because I had to pull away from family influences because they wanted me to follow along areas that were too dangerous for me.
Well, that's fascinating.
I flew away from it, but he, Bill Ring was his name, and his son, my nephew, is still in business on Balboa. The Balboa, what is it, insurance or no, real estate, isn't it?
I believe it's real estate, Ralph.
We're not very close. But.
Well, that's okay. I remember my grandfather was the chef at Ciro's for almost 10 years
in the
1940s and in the very early 50s. And he left there and ended up down as the chef for quite a long time at the Balboa Bay Club. And when I was a little kid, I'm talking 10 years old, he put me to work in the kitchen. And the Balboa Bay Club had a dining room that held, I think it was 400 people that could get in there. It was a huge private club. And I worked in there for 3 years at a dollar an hour. And and then I ended up working on the island. And I ran a paddleboard stand on Balboa Island. And I used to work on the ferry. What a golden place that used to be.
My God. I just loved it. You know, I lived in Costa Mesa at the time.
And that's where I went to high school.
Oh, really? Costa Mesa?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. This is closing a gap here somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't go to school there, but I lived there for quite some time.
Uh-huh.
And I worked for my uncle for a while on the golf course up at Irvine Country Club. And I got tired of that and decided to, you know, I was taking classes. I was taking marine biology and oceanography and a lot of at Orange Coast, you know, college. And, and then I took some things at Irvine, biology and a bunch of things that weren't very interesting to me, but I took them because I thought I had to have them. But that was years and years ago.
Yeah.
And I decided to go back to what I do best, and that's work with nature, work with the laws of nature.
I also worked, I forget the name of it now. There was was the Big Boulevard Southwest Boulevard? Am I remembering right?
I think you're right.
And there was there used to be a damned, now I was really little, but there was a buffalo ranch on there. They had actual buffalo.
Yes, actual buffalo all over the place, yes. And, I remember that. That's strange you'd remember that one.
And then I worked in a gun club, and I'd sit underground in this bunker, load clay pigeons on a machine that would throw them out, and then people would shoot them with their shotguns. Anyway, I had a lot of fun down there, and it was such a jewel of a place. I'm glad you got to share that and enjoy that too. I was just
I used to go down to the Newport Market in those days. They had the best macaroni and cheese because they did it with real cream, real butter, and my God! And I'd load up myself a big carton of that and go to the wharf and eat it.
Nice.
Wonderful.
Newport Pier, Balboa Pier, the Rendezvous Ballroom, Johnny Otis. Anyway, I went back and did a lot of research on that, and I've got some pictures, too, somewhere. Anyway, we're getting aside here, but some of you listening may know about what we're talking about, and there are wonderful places around the country that are all gone. It's just gone. I mean, physically, they're still there, but that ambiance is just gone. The kindness. It was a kind and gentler place then.
Well, the corporate, like the military, regimentation has just slowly creeped into everything we were doing by bartering or by just generally being ourselves into, well, you're going to have to do it this way and that way. And that slowly started changing the way people did things.
Right.
But I might add, from being rather joyful to life to be very confused because they didn't like to be told what to do, and I was one of those.
Yeah. You went against the grain because that's what we lost, the ability to be proactive in life. They want us to be reactive and toe the line, and that's what they're creating now in schools, just drooling, directionless, aimless, with no inspiration, young people, and there are wonderful exceptions. Some are listening right now. But the rank and file is just not there. I don't know how it's going to recover. All right, let's get back to Otis T. Carr and okay. Ralph Ring. And
The way you asked me a question and I kind of deviated, I wanted to give you a little background.
Yeah.
My wife got nervous about me diving, and I ran into some special diving that required special equipment and special things. That was getting too scary for her because some of our divers, we had problems. They had problems with the underwater, and I never did. I was a go-getter from the get-go.
Uh-huh.
But she said, no, we got the kids here, and you need to take the trash out once in a while. So I was having breakfast one morning, and she circled a newspaper, a want-ad thing, for an ad from a place called Advanced Kinetics, located in Costa Mesa.
Hmm.
And it was a research and R&D development, and said they were looking for a lab tech. And I said, well, wait a minute. I just came out of the service. I went into diving. I don't know. That's a scientific job. And she said, just go down there and put in an app and see what happens. Because you're always tinkering around the house. I've had things running on wireless all over the place. And she thought, well, maybe they'd be interested. So I went down and I'll cut it short so I can get into Carr and what we did. But I went down there, and it was lunchtime. Everybody was on break. And I walked up and down. I said, well, I guess I'll come back. And I walked by the director's office. Dr. Weinhardt was the director there.
Weinhardt?
Weinhardt.
Okay.
And I walked by his office, and he said, well, what are you looking for? And I said, well, I was looking for a job. And he said, well, they're out to lunch right now. I want to come back later. And he said, what are you looking for? And I said, well, I'm answering this ad for a lab tech. He says, come in here and sit down. So I went in his office, and he says, what's your qualifications? I said, well, I'm a diver and so forth. And I said, no, I think I would interest you and you would interest me because I deal with natural laws. And I was raised in the woods for the first part of my life. It was all spent in the woods. And everything I learned about nature was simplicity. And I think
you
can reduce.
You told him that?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, that's what a great interview. Wow.
Well, anyway, he said that his engineer, one of his engineers just quit. He was working on a magnetic. It was a R&D for the government. It was a government-funded outfit. And he was working on a magnetic project, and I told him that was my main interest in life was magnetism. I'd been in, around, and through and of it for all my life.
Wow.
He said, well, you know about, and I said, well, yeah, I know a little bit about it. I look at that from a natural standpoint. I don't need a textbook to explain it, and I may not have the terminology that you have, but I can, you know. He says, well, you're hired. He says, go back. I said, well, I haven't even filled out an app yet. And he says, just go back there. The guys will show you what to do, and I want you to work on the magnetic thing. I'll give you enough money so you'll be happy.
What a great story. See, that's not serendipity. That's supposed to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and magnetism being my interest, and here comes a job, and
yeah.
My wife, and oh God, everything fell into place. So I went in, they gave me my workbench and everything. It consisted of a giant oscilloscope, a giant, in those days it was a Polaroid camera,
mm-hmm.
And a cathode ray, you know, like the old television set,
mm-hmm.
which would fire electrons.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, all you have to do in your job is to keep firing these electrons every few minutes, seconds, or whatever, and record it. It'll be recorded on film, but you need to write in the time and everything.
Or like 16 millimeter film? Or magnetic film?
Well, it was a Xerox cameras.
Oh, okay.
Snapping them, it would snap automatically.
Uh huh.
And
What part of Costa Mesa was this facility located in?
Okay, darn, I mean, you might ask that.
Well, Harbor Boulevard, we know that, and...
No, it was, gosh.
Near Orange Coast College, or near Hogue Hospital?
Well, it was up from Hogue, that's where my kids were born. It was up from, well, wait a minute, it was about 2 miles due east of Hogue.
Okay.
I don't know. And it was a pretty large facility. I mean, it was a block at least, or maybe 2 blocks. Yeah, it was a large
there
facility.
I remember some big buildings there, and I think about what you're talking about. I know the area. They weren't particularly marked. They were just these big buildings.
No, there was no markings. They had very... they wanted to be low-key, I guess.
There you go. Well, I think I know what you mean.
Find them.
Mm-hmm.
But, so, they said all you have to do is get an electron through that field without a deflection. It, you know, you fire it, and you're going through a magnetic field, and don't let it go to the negative or positive anymore. Get one straight through. Well, it didn't take me long to figure out that's why the other engineer or the engineer quit. I was never an engineer, and I was just going in as a lab tech.
Uh-huh.
But I found out he got frustrated and very tired of the, or boring perhaps is the word, of the job, because you're using force, you're using brute force to force an electron through a field that doesn't feel like following your command.
Uh-huh.
And you're never going to get it done that way. And I, about a week after the job, I figured out, oh, I can go home and do this and bring it back and show them an easier way to do it. And which I did, but along with that, there was the next bench over. They were working on levitation. They were using these coils. They were called egregatrons in those days, and they were $400 a copy if you had to go check another one out. And they were burning them up like hotcakes. I mean, they just couldn't suspend a steel ball more than 6 inches above the coil without burning out the egregatron. So I said, oh, they're using the wrong technique. I'll get that one solved, too, while I'm at it. I was a cocky little guy then, I guess.
And you did. You resolved the problem?
Yeah, I went home, and I took across, apart an old television at a garage sale or a yard sale. I don't know where I got most of my stuff. But I got the cathode ray out, and I set up the magnetic field and a little... rail so that there was a travel when I fired the electron.
Uh-huh.
I would travel through the magnetic field, and I said, well, what they're doing and what they're not doing is what I'm going to do and show them how simple it is, and maybe I'll get a raise. So all I did, this was the simplicity of it, I set up the field. And I had an audio amplifier that I picked up, and I remember, I think it was $25 at a garage sale.
Mm-hmm.
And I hooked everything up to that. But also, my wife was taking pictures and stuff of the experiment. But what I did that was different was I made friends with the electron, which sounds silly and ridiculous. But I found a friendly approach to anything. Any type of work or people, places, or things, is you're way ahead right from the get-go if you're friendly. So
you're talking about attitude here and energetics, the approach to things. You're not confrontational. You're wanting things to flow, and that was the mental that was coming from you at a very deep level. This is very interesting. Ralph, would you hold on? I have to pause just for a couple of minutes.
Absolutely, sure.
We'll come right back. And also, Todd, I want you to call Ralph back. Ralph, I want you to hang up. Todd's going to call you right back. I want to see if we can get rid of this tiny bit of scratch on the line. Okay?
Okay.
So just
hang up now.
Todd will call you right back. All right, and we will be right back. More fascinating conversation. are back talking to Ralph Ring. Just a wonderful story. All right, so you literally changed your approach to these electrons. And I understand what you're saying. Go tell us more. This is really fascinating.
Well, I related my experience living in the woods of talking to every animal I could find, every ant, every bug, every fish, and it always worked in the woods. But when I came out and got into the big world out here, everything was backwards. They wanted to do things complicated. They wanted to go to academia and, you know, reference libraries, and I joined them for a while and decided, my God, what am I doing here? When they told me a bumblebee couldn't fly and there was one staring me in the face out the classroom window, I quit. I quit academia and I said, I'm going back to nature.
You were so far ahead of them, Ralph. Jeez.
Well, and I'll catch you up on your question. I can get the car. I just wanted to say that the difference that I did was I talked to the little electron and I got a feeling. Well, they're using force. So what's the opposite of force? Just peace. Just be. Just, you know, love. Love what you're doing. And I did. I loved my experiment. So I said, okay, guy, I'm going to send you through. And I'm going to pulse the signal. It's a term they use in science. And I'm going to give you a few milliseconds to get through there. I'm not going to force you. I just want you to tell me how many milliseconds you need to do it your way, not my way.
You took all the intruding resistance away and let him have a nice, peaceful walk through. That's what you
did. Yes, sir. I did. Thank you for your understanding. Most people by now would have hung up on me.
Oh, no. Not here. All right.
Anyway, Marcia's got a... She wants to say... No, you don't want to say anything? Okay. All right. Never mind. So what I did, I pulsed the signal, and immediately the electron... And this was the first shot. I thought I'd have to go, you know, do 20 or 30 or maybe 200. The first shot, it went into a spiral, which is, in the term of science, vortex mechanics. It goes into a vortexual motion and allows itself to push, pull, all the way through the field.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't being forced. It was going, well, I like a little positive. I think I'm a little negative. It was going through
totally
the field.
Naturally. I understand.
Yeah. So I got it through the field, and I took a bunch of pictures and wrote up the experiment. And I said, okay, that being done, this was a weekend, I think, I'll tackle this levitation thing. That's simple. I used to lay on the grass and watch the clouds form out of nowhere into this enormous clouds that carried at eight pounds per gallon, this enormous weight of trillions of tons of water. Right over my head,
right,
and quite naturally, no force, no, just things coming together at the right time and place to enable that to happen, and then a signal from the ground or wherever it comes from, it would rain.
Let me ask you a question about clouds. The people don't understand that they are mass, they are weight, the water weight, whatever you want to call it. And here they are, just balanced perfectly, floating along. These enormous—I don't know how you'd calculate the weight of a cloud, but if you put another mass up there of equal weight, it would make an enormous hole in the ground, real quick.
Very, very quick. You bet. Yeah,
unreal.
Considering the laws of the so-called laws of gravity.
Right.
Yeah. The big hole.
Go ahead, Ralph. All right. So you worked on the levitation.
The same television I took the cathode ray out of, I had a big 15-inch Wolford speaker. In those days, those televisions were huge with a big speaker, and I used to listen to the Lone Ranger on a similar speaker. So it was a nice 15-inch Wolford, and I set it on its backside, the magnet down on the floor, and I started using my internal scientist, if you want to call it that.
That's fine with me. I got you. That's good.
To go to work, and then I could see, let's fire it up with that little audio amplifier that you bought.
Mm-hmm.
So I hooked it up to that, and then I started experimenting with which is really acoustical levitation. But I figured if I can do this, then I can kind of show them a path of where they can do more with the ideas than I can.
Sonic levitation.
Sonic, yeah. I saw an 8mm film way back, I think. Oh, God, I won't remember where it was, but the Tibetans in Tibet with their long horns and their drums, and they take these huge stones. My God, it must be tons. I don't know, maybe 5 tons or something, and just start blowing their horns and beating their drums, and these would come up the side of the hill, up the cliff, actually, and they just did it like there was nothing to it.
Uh-huh.
And that film, I think, is still around. Somebody told me they saw it one time, but I've been trying to get a hold of it again. But it's out there. I mean,
think of the great blocks of granite at the pyramid. Sure.
Yeah. Simple levitation. I mean, it just so I fooled around with different things, and then I realized what is known as sacred geometry. And in nature, there's just, if you don't have your timing just right, if you don't reach the node of something, it's not going to work. And that includes getting friends with a wild animal.
Right.
If you're not calm enough to approach with peace, you might run into some trouble. So the node is the point where time and space come together. It's like a zero point in itself. And when you reach that, then you have neutralized the resistance or pressure or anything else around it. And these are in milliseconds sometimes. It's the same thing we do in our conversations with people. If we miss our cue in an important conversation, we can't get it in when it needs to be. And if you said it 2 seconds later, it doesn't mean anything as well as it would 2 seconds earlier. So, anyhow, that being said,
that you reached the point you almost call it a zero point with the animal. Let's say you got an animal out there, and you both have gotten the vibration has reached some sort of universality. It's a zero point. There's complete instant communication. You are one. Not to be corny, but you are. That's your one. You become one with whatever it is you're communing with, and all of a sudden there are no barriers, no obstacles, nothing, and that. That makes absolute perfect sense to me. I understand what you're saying.
Well said. My God. Yeah, thank you. I have a hard time explaining myself sometimes, but that hits a nail on the head.
Yeah.
And that same zero point was what I used on the Wolford speaker.
Uh-huh.
I was putting things in there, and I said, no, go back to the circle. Go back to the sphere. And I said, well, yeah, okay, here's a ping pong ball. And I put the ping pong ball in there and turned up the amplifier a little bit, and pretty soon the ping pong ball, just as nicely as anything, levitated, you know, about 6 inches above the speaker. And I said, well, that's a start.
That's a great start. Were you introducing a hum at a certain cycles per second in that?
Yeah, there was, and I don't, everybody's asked me, what do you think that was? And I just took a rough guess at 80, 28K or so. I don't know where I was, but
all right. And you sensed it and you found it. It's okay. It was made available to you, and you dialed it in. I got it. Yeah. Very good.
And by that time, my wife was pulling me to bed because it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and she said, "Just let it go. And if it's there in the morning, maybe you got something." And well, I came out in the morning, and there it was. It was staring me right in the face. There it is.
So, how exciting! Great.
I took pictures of that and wrote it up, and I got ready to go to work, and I called Dr. Weinhardt and said, "I got something I want to talk to you about." And he said, "Okay." So I took him in to show him what I'd done. He looked at the pictures and read the report. And he says, "Oh, my God, I didn't think you'd get into this." He says, "Ralph, do you know where you're at?" And I said, "Well, what? I know I'm not an engineer and I don't know much about the way you guys do it, but I know something about the way nature does things. And it's without force. It's using an equal playing field, if you will, giving the respect to whatever you're working with, the equal rights as yourself to operate. And it works fine. I've never had a problem." He says, "Well, this stuff," he says, and he looked both the experiments over, and he said, yes, I see this. Okay, I didn't think you were into that kind of stuff." And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Well, Ralph, I've got to tell you something. I'm going to have to shred this, and I'm going to have to tell you to go back to work, and I'll give you a little more in your pay envelope, but you don't realize where you're working here. This is a government-funded R&D, research and development facility, and we're hired and paid for by the government to look for answers, but not find them." My whole life changed when I heard that. I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
That's like getting hit over the head. Wow.
It was. Because he said, "No, you just, we'll get there someday," or whatever. And he said, "Go back to work." And, well, just to get our story moving on to Carr, I went
was
back
he,
to
was
work
he, by the way, was Weinhardt American, German?
I think he was German.
Uh-huh.
Pretty sure he was German.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thanks.
Because he was as stubborn as I was. So I know. I'm part German. I'm Wales and Welsh and German and French and I don't know what else.
Well, thank goodness you've understood the way things really work, or you'd be a real pain, wouldn't you?
Oh, I've been a pain all my life because everything I've advocated, it just wasn't going to fly. Because there was no monetary return on a lot of the things I said. Because once you set it in motion, you don't have to go back and keep repeating it. It'll repeat itself if you understand the timing and the sacred geometry, the ley lines and so forth. You don't have to make a lot of money. Just be happy at what you're doing, and the money will come in to give you everything you need to do it with. So I lasted another week, and I remember going out of there with I was crying because I couldn't believe they'd turn me down. I was just trying to help, and I thought I had a pretty good idea, and I turn it over to the engineers and let them take it to the next level. Well, just before I left, my buddy, he was on the electron microscope. We were talking about this and stuff, and I said, "Man, I can't believe they're turning me down," and said they're going to shred it and everything. And he said, "Well, that's." He said, "Let me show you something." He says, "I want to show you who you are." I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Come over here." He'd set up a little rig on his device on this microscope, and he says, "Now, what do you think that is that you're looking at?" And it was my finger. I said, "It's my finger." He says, "All right, now I want you to put your finger in here, and then just relax. Put your finger in here. It's not going to bite. And then look through my scope that I've got focused over here." And I said, "Well, okay, sure." And when I did that and I looked in the scope, my life changed again because I found out I'm invisible. I don't really exist. There was just particles. There were just a bunch of electrons and whatever was moving around.
A lot of space in between them, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a finger. And yeah. I tried it for 10, 15 minutes trying to see my finger in his scope. He says, well, I can draw out and let you see your finger if you have to, but that's your finger looking out. Your energy.
All energy.
And nothing else. I said, well, I'm flesh and blood here, man. I've got a body, and I eat and sleep. He says, well, you'll get it someday. And so, anyway, I left there, and I was really reluctant to go home because I was feeding two kids and taking care of all the mortgages and all that stuff that I had to do.
Right.
And I ran into my buddy that lived down the block. And he says, "What? You look sad. What's the matter with you?" And I said, "Well, I just quit. I don't know how to tell my wife that because I can't go back into diving, and I don't know what I'm going to do."
Uh huh.
And he said, "Well, why'd you quit?" And I told him, and then I told him that my interest was in magnetics and that I wanted to use that my knowledge of magnetism to improve life on the planet. To,
sure.
If people would understand what pure magnetism is, not electromagnetism necessarily, but pure magnetism.
Natural magnetism, sure.
Thank you. Natural magnetism. This would change everybody's life and make it just beautifully simple and easy,
yeah.
And they wouldn't have to toil for a living. They could do whatever they want.
All of a sudden, the resistance is working with you, not against you.
Yes.
Yeah,
this guy's a beautiful interviewer. You're making it easy, Jeff. Thank you.
I sleep on a magnetic mattress pad and have for almost 20 years. It's
oh my gosh.
At 12,000 Gauss magnets, hundreds of them, and they're pointed north polarity up only, and your south goes down, and I'm in a field, north polarity field. The company is called Magnetico, and they're wonderful. They're just, it's a wonderful thing. It's simple, and I'm in that field when I'm sleeping, and my body is happy, it's restoring, it's just, it's a whole different way of living. Anyway, please go ahead, but I want you to know I do understand, certainly in a rudimentary way, what you're saying and where you're going with this, so.
Thank you. My wife's writing that down. What was it, Magnetico or?
Magnetico, yeah, M-A-G-N-E-T-I-C-O, magneticosleep.com. I have a banner on my front page. Dr. Bonley's been a friend for over 20 years, and he's the inventor, Dr. Dean Bonley. And, yeah, it's right on my home page. It's the fourth banner down from the top, but anyway.
Yeah, I'd like to look into that.
Yeah, wonderful stuff.
Very interesting. So anyway, so I told him what happened, and he knew that I was a nut because I was flying things around the house and going through the walls with things, and he was my neighbor, so he
where were you? Yeah, I'm sorry, I have to, for our listeners, you just said you were going through the wall with things. Somehow were able to get down to that spatial realm and move things through the wall. Correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But this was too early to discuss it with even myself because I was doing things and they were happening and I didn't understand how they could happen.
Got it. Yeah.
So, yeah, but he did. He could see. He was observing me. He'd sit down on with his cooler and his lawn chair and watch my house. Well, anyway, long story short, I... told him that, you know, my goal, I've got to get people to see the simplicity. How do you go around telling them to take a look at the things differently than the way they've been looking at them? Because they've been looking at them for a long, long time that way, because they were trained, they were taught, they were... And most of what I learned, has been... Not the whole truth. It's been a part of the truth, but not the whole truth. And suddenly, half of the truth was missing. So they never had a complete thing they could put together and have fun with. And so I said, I want to build spaceships, or the equivalent thereof, to have floating homes, floating cities, floating countries. Well, we're on one now. Bucky Pruler, when I met him in Washington, he told me, you know, I read his quote later, but he told me, he says, you're on one. You're on a big spaceship right now. So, and then I realized that everything is in essence one. It's just a tree is one, but it has many branches. It has thousands of branches to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one tree. The tree that nourishes and does everything for the branches, for the leaves and everything. So, if I'm getting too far out, I'll slow
down. No, I love
bit.
Trees. That's fine. No problem.
Okay, great.
I planted thousands of trees in my life.
Oh, well, you know what I'm talking about. It's so beautiful to see the, you know, and people think there's a pump going to pump the water up, and they don't know the leaves when they don't understand the mechanisms of the water, tons of water getting up that big tree.
And, right.
And right. stuff. So I don't even talk about it. I just tell them to if they really want to know, Google it. Because there's some incredible information coming out now about natural laws with the advent of the quantum physics and quantum mechanics and
right.
quantum everything.
Well, it's so sad to hear how you were treated by the establishment, and it's such a game, such an ugly game, really. You should have been welcomed and let go as far and as fast as you could go in that field, but that's not the way the species is set up.
I know, and I wondered for years what in the heck, and I found out I followed the money. Somebody said follow the money, and I found out the whole thing is money.
Yes, it
it's
is.
Not a system of
no. like it's not of by and for the people, for God's sakes. No, it's of by and for the money.
No, it's all for the money, and the money was going to the few, not where it belongs.
Absolutely.
To the many.
Yeah.
So
we're coming, Ralph, we're coming up on
okay.
time to take a break here again at the top of the hour. And we
sure.
will be right back. With more, looking forward to this this next hour. We'll talk about Otis T. Carr and many more things as well with Ralph and Marcia. So come right back with us. We'll be back.